Blog Talk Radio.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and I see the news faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained. They rode us all the way into New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I sang soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wipers clapping time. I told Bobby Tannerman we sang every song that Javi knew. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing, I mean nothing, honey, if it ain't free. Yeah, feeling good was easy, love, when it sang blues. You know, feeling good was good enough for me. Good enough for me and my Bobby, yeah. From the Kentucky coal mine to the California sun, hey, Bobby shares the secret of my soul. Through all kinds of weather, through everything we've done, your Bobby, baby, kept me from the cold. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing, that's all that Bobby left me. But it's feeling good was easy, loud when he sang the blues. Hey, feeling good was good enough for me. Good enough for me and my Bobby.
Skirt dress, yeah. But when she gets weary, you try your little tenderness. Oh man, now I know she's waiting, yep, anticipating for things that you'll never forget. No, no. But while she's there waiting, try just a little bit of tenderness. That's all you got to do. Now it might be a little bit sentimental, no, no, no. But she has her reason, yeah. But the soft words, they all spoke so gentle, yeah. And it makes it easy to bear. Oh, friend, no, no. Young girls, they don't forget it.
Very good tune. My mother used to sing this. This is Otis. I love Otis.
We're closed.
You know what an older woman does for me?
Changes your diapers.
Douche. No, seriously, though. You're a very smoky alternative for this. The duck man's loving knife. Shall we?
You ever had one of these?
Here's to the crazy ones. The misfits. The rebels. The troublemakers. The round pegs in the square holes. The ones who see things differently. They're not fond of rules, and they have no respect for the status quo. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify or vilify them. About the only thing you can't do is ignore them, because they change things. They push the human race forward. While some may see them as the crazy ones, we see genius. Because the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do.
What's your problem, Babu?
Thank you. Brian too, who works with my best friend Pete. Brian who works with my best friend Pete. Brian too, who works with me.
Don't let food hang around. Clean it up with Orbit.
Ow.
Fabulous!
Ow.
For a good clean feeling after any meal.
Drink juice Orbit.
Don't forget to bring a towel.
Puff, 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 puff. 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 Puff, puff, puff.
My house, like, what up? I got some good pot. I'm just pumped up, got some herb from the pot shop. Ice in my fridge, it used to be frosty. My friend's like, damn, that's a stoned ass donkey. Rolling in hella high, looking like it's pizza time. Dominating all my friends as I eat some chili fries. Draped in a Snuggie with my girl sitting next to me. Probably shouldn't have had a big gulp full of iced tea. But shit, it was 99 cents. I'll be blazing and smoking it. About to go and get some munchies next. Passing up on those Cracker Jacks. Reese's Pieces are where it's at. Gotta get me some soda pop. Cottonmouth has been creeping up. But can't remember where I put my keys. Yeah, that's what's up. I'ma take your grandpa's ride. I'ma take your grandpa's ride. No, for real. Ask your grandpa, can I take a 65? Deville cruising to my local Publix. Nothing better than rolling with two super fly chicks. They have frozen burritos. I bought frozen burritos. I bought some Ben and Jerry's. And then I bought some Cheetos. Hello, hello, my main man Obama. A couple states have just reformed their laws on marijuana. What you gonna do, send the feds there? Hell no, the DEAs would be like, aw, oh, they got volcanoes.
I'm gonna smoke some weed, only got $20 in my pocket. I'm a hunting, looking for a pot shop, this is fucking
know about the science of marijuana. What you know about people suffering from glaucoma? They need it, they need it, it helps them with their condition. If you don't believe me, then just ask some eye physicians. Thank your granddad for voting for that guy Richard Nixon is the president who made the plant illegal. But science is now showing that it's medicine for people, and the private sector fighting to keep all of that illegal. Alcohol and tobacco, pharmaceutical prisons. I'll take those four major lobby groups and fight those motherfuckers. They're making money day and night, all those motherfuckers. And bribing Congress out of sight, all those motherfuckers. They'd be like, oh, it's immoral and unhealthy. I'm like, how many people are you making wealth? Anti-marijuana lobbies are making all kinds of profits, and they don't want you to stop it because of all the special interest. I call that getting swindled and pimped shit. I call that getting tricked by the government. That law's hella old, so it's time to update it, regulate it, and then get it under state control. Peak game, look into my political telescope. Think it's gonna stay like this forever? Not hella won't. Not hella won't.
Hey Obama, stop being a hypocrite. You used to smoke weed, fool.
I'm gonna smoke some weed. Only got $20 in my pocket. I'm a hunt, looking for a pot shop. This is fucking awesome. Let's end the war on drugs. It's time to pull the plug. These special interest groups are nothing more than corporate thugs. Let's end the war on weed. The people have agreed. These special interest groups have kept these laws with bribery. I'm gonna smoke some weed.
Only got $20 in my pocket. I'm a hunt, looking for a pot shop. This is fucking awesome.
Is that your grandma's pipe?
What's up? Welcome back, guys. That is stuff, you know, that just is really, that is it. Woof!
Almost dropped the phone, that was so good.
Well, so I was talking about Earld, and I'm also going to talk about the world. I've got my best friend from high school will be calling in at some point, just simply because I had absolutely no idea what to do tonight. I've had a very busy week. And during this busy week, I thought
long and hard at what I should do. At Whole Foods, as I was buying Dill Havarti, I thought, you know, maybe I'll look into meeting Allen Ginsberg's ghost somewhere on the corner of 16th Street Mall in downtown Denver. And he'll say to me, dude, I've just been really wanting to be on a blog talk radio show. And that's why I've been haunting the streets. It's because I had to stay up and be on top of this technology. And, you know, I really have no idea what that means. And I was really referencing Obi-Wan Kenobi when I said Allen Ginsberg. That's really what I meant.
So I'm here with James Arnold Taylor, the voice of Obi-Wan Kenobi in Clone Wars.
Yes.
And I've got to say, you've nailed the Ewan McGregor meets Alec Guinness.
Yeah, it is one of those voices where, you know, I started doing an impression of Ewan McGregor,
okay,
or a voice match. It was when we were doing episode 3, and I would do the games and things like that and fill in when he wasn't available. So at the time, I was very specifically just getting his voice and doing what he would do and his mannerisms and, you were supposed to be the chosen one, you know, and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And then now with the Clone Wars, I'm able to take, you know, these aren't the droids you're looking for, and then take a little of Ewan and both of them together, and then you get this Obi-Wan Kenobi, which is right there.
I could be mistaken, but I think someone is trying to kill us.
You have successfully combined the Guinness and the McGregor.
Yes.
A kind of McGuinness.
Yeah, McGuinness. There you go. Great.
Yeah.
Now, I understand you have a desire.
I do. I want to nail it. I mean, it's your job. You can do it.
Right.
But, you know, I maybe want to challenge you for that.
Well, you have the lightsaber, which is good.
I'm halfway
so,
there.
Right, right. So just channel your... Oh, I like that.
I'm ready. Okay.
Channel your inner Obi-Wan. Be mindful of the Force and say, I have a bad feeling about this.
I have a bad feeling about this.
Not bad.
What
not
am I doing
bad.
Wrong? That wasn't quite.
I'm not
generous.
Scared yet.
Okay.
That you're going to take my job.
I could be mistaken.
How about?
Oh, Anakin.
Oh, Anakin.
That's not bad. Okay.
You have a better English accent than me. It's embarrassing.
That's really weird.
That is.
Oh. Yeah. How about Anakin? Anakin. I see. I was closer.
Yeah,
there
I'm getting
go.
Better.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
It's the heat.
It's different levels. Yeah, that's the whole thing about Obi-Wan. He can be Anakin. Anakin. Anakin!
So,
you know, so you've got just by one word.
Yeah. What's my motivation there for this?
Anakin! He is about to do something ridiculous.
Okay.
So, yeah. That
so
would
I'm going to go and step in and save him.
Okay.
Anakin!
Not bad.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad. Let me try.
Sounds a little bit like I'm constipated.
It does sound that.
Yeah.
This is not my lightsaber either.
Oh, you beat
which
that.
I'm really, yeah, I'm a bit upset about, but that's all right. No. Try something like, you know, Anakin, you were supposed to be the chosen one! Anakin, you are the chosen one.
Supposed to be. Didn't you get the line right?
It's all right. It's all right.
It's embarrassing.
Let's try it like Fred Flintstone.
Okay.
Because I'm also the voice of Fred Flintstone, which I know you wouldn't have guessed.
I wouldn't have.
But,
Yabba-dabba-do, Anakin.
Something like that?
Okay, I'll try that.
Now, how about David Spade? Yeah, wait a second. Anakin. Okay, yeah, right over here? Okay, yeah, all right. Or we could do it as Michael J. Fox. Like, whoa, wait a second, Anakin. You mean to tell me that this lightsaber... Is it DeLorean? No, that's not the right line, is it?
The way I see it, Anakin, if you're going to build a time machine out of a car, why not do it with some style?
Well, you could do it as Christopher Walken, you know, trying to be Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, Anakin, you're supposed to be the chosen one. Very upset.
That would work. You should pitch that idea,
there's
actually.
There's a whole thing there. Okay, yeah, maybe we're onto something here.
I think we maybe should knock our heads together, and I could do some voices.
Yeah, I'll do some, and we combine them.
Do you know what? That's absolutely perfect. Thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.
And we are next to the real R2-D.
I know.
I just want to point that out.
Now watch this. Watch it.
I'll tell you, he's fired.
He doesn't get to.
That's on camera.
That's what the whole Obi-Wan thing buys you here.
I bet we've been together for a million years.
And I bet we'll be together for a million more.
It's like I started breathing on the night we kissed.
When I can't remember what I ever did before. What would we do, baby, without us?
No one can stop this mission.
obviously have little regard for womanhood. You must learn respect.
I prefer not to soil my hands on female flesh, but if you insist...
Look, I'm a regular guy, more or less, and I think about regular guy things. And like a lot of regular guys, I didn't really consider myself a feminist, per se, for a long time. Honestly, I didn't think about it much at all. In my defense, I may have been a little bit distracted. But somewhere along the way, I started to pay attention. And the more I learned about feminism, the more I realized that I always kind of have been a feminist. And so are most people, if the subject is explained to them. So why does it seem like feminism is a dirty word? I mean, the movement started off pretty positive and offensive, right? Equal pay for equal work, let women vote, that sort of thing. There's a lot more to the movement, and I'll get to some of it, but first, let's talk about why feminists get a bad name. Are they really all that extreme? Sure, dig around, you'll find your share of wackos, but there isn't a cause or principle in existence that doesn't have a few people supporting it that you kind of wish were not. Extremists and the vocally ignorant people in a movement shouldn't automatically ruin that movement's goals. I think we can blame one guy in particular for doing a lot of damage to feminism's message in the last decade or two. An angry, myopic, conniving, drug-addicted, philandering man with a very big audience. He coined the term feminazi, you see, and if I may, I'd like to directly address the man and his quote. I believe, sir, that your cartoonish wordplay used to deride the feminist movement is at its very best an uninformed opinion resulting from your well-known propensity to oversimplify, and at worst, a calculated ploy to demolish political enemies through Orwellian tactics as effective as they are frightening. Maybe you're not with me yet, so let's explore for a second what feminism is and why we need it. At the core, feminism is the belief that women should be on equal footing with men as far as society, morality, and ethics are concerned, that this is not the case now, and that we need to do something about it. Now, if you really don't think women ought to be treated equally, then feel free to tune me out for the next 3 minutes or so. No, seriously, I don't have the time or inclination to argue. For the rest of you, let's think about why this isn't the case right now. It's a known fact that women get paid less than men for the same job, and yeah, there's a lot going into that statistic, but part of why is that women's work is less valued. If you're a mother, you're 100% less likely to be hired for a job than if you didn't have any kids. Fathers are actually more likely to be hired. I'm about to be very blunt and discuss some very unpleasant, but true things, and so I am going to stick with the cute slides for a little bit. Workplace inequity is bad. Sure, but it gets way, way worse once we get out of the office and into the home. Domestic violence against women is appallingly common. A woman is battered every 15 seconds in this country, usually by their husband or boyfriend. Perhaps the only thing more depressing than the fact that 1/6 of all women have been the victim of at least attempted rape is that there are almost as many men responsible for committing them. You see, I told you you were really a feminist. You think these things are as terrible as I do, and you want them to change, but what can we do to change things for the better? How can we promote the ideals of feminism and take back the word and its image? Well, we can start by promoting good role models for feminism to our kids. Me, I like Wonder Woman. How much more liberated can you get, right? She's strong, she's clever, she's very independent. Mind you, she's had her share of misogyny to overcome. When she started in the Justice Society, they made her a secretary. Seriously, I couldn't make that up, but she proved her own. She wasn't taking no mess from the old boys' club. You know, Gloria Steinem likes Wonder Woman, and so should you. I think little girls should be encouraged to take a lesson from Wonder Woman, to be independent and to not look for a man to help them necessarily. So much of the media geared towards young girls is lacking in that message. Take, for example, princesses. Princesses are boring, yo. They sit around in peril, waiting for their prince, or Italian stereotype and his creepy tag-along brother, to rescue them from the dragon or whatever. Weak and boring. You think Wonder Woman would put up with that bullshit? Hell no, she wouldn't. She'd be kicking some dragon ass. She isn't going to sit around waiting for some lame-ass plumber to rescue her. Now, it may seem like I'm sucking the fun out of innocent play here, but it's more serious than it looks. This kind of play conditions women from early on. Feminism isn't just about burning bras or waving signs about herstory. It's about education of women and men, of society as a whole, that things may be better than they used to be, but they are not fair, not yet, and we're not supposed to quit until it is fair. All women are feminists, or at least they really, really should be. But men, too, maybe especially, need to recognize that they also have an important role to play in this. They need to own that word, too, and to take steps to live by its principles. These are our wives, mothers, sisters and daughters we're talking about. They deserve to be treated with fairness and respect, with an understanding of who they are. As women, yes, but also as people. And if you think we're there already, I'm telling you, we aren't.
How many wars were started because of dick size? That's how I think.
You know, that's a good point.
The missiles look like fucking cocks, man. The missiles look like cocks, okay?
You know what? Missiles, bombs, and all that shit, very phallic. You're right on.
If women were in charge, we wouldn't have this problem. We'd only have war 1 week out of the month.
Good point. Very good point. Yes. And you know
That's not sexist at all.
No, it's not. And it would be bloody as hell, these little wars once a month. Would be bloody as hell. But you know what?
I'm not sexist. I love women. I'm not sexist. Without women, I would not be alive. So anyone out there listening, the two people listening, if you think I'm sexist, I'll set you straight. Women,
you know what?
I'm the ultimate feminist.
You are.
If only I could start a fucking poem. If only I could lick my balls. If only I could lick my balls, I wouldn't need to help her cook or do dishes. If only I could lick my balls, the trash and recycling wouldn't be a problem, and the empty beer bottles wouldn't matter. If only I could lick my balls, I wouldn't have to listen or understand her feelings. If only I could lick my balls, I wouldn't have a dry spell 1 week out of the month or have to buy tampons. If only I could lick my balls, the pile of dirty clothes wouldn't have to be picked up until I was out of underwear. If only I could lick my balls, size wouldn't matter, and a quickie would give me more time to write. If only I could lick my balls, I could come and go as I please, and in the end, she'd be right in calling me a dog. And fucking hell.
We're hiding in the wilderness, in the woods.
There must be something more you can tell us.
There is nothing more.
Too bad we didn't capture one of their ringleaders.
Well, at least this one has seen their hiding place. Maybe you don't know exactly where it is, but you can describe it.
I already have.
We'll do it again. I want every detail.
It's in the woods. There are trees, bushes, grass, and a hill with rocks, and a cave.
A cave?
A tunnel going through the hill.
A tunnel? Well, let's see, there's no mine shafts around here, no old railroad tunnels. We've checked out all the underground aqueducts.
What else?
It's in the woods with animals. At least there used to be animals.
Animals?
A zoo. Isn't there an old zoo just outside the city? In Malin?
Oh, yeah, but I wouldn't exactly call that wilderness.
The landscaping for the animals. Trees, grass, rocks. From the inside, it would look like a wilderness, especially to aliens.
Yeah, that would explain the tunnel, too. Well, it's worth a try. Get me Major Zimmerman right away, please.
You'll be wrong. You'll never get us, and you'll never save Andros either.
Ah, and now... Frankie Mitrau from the 505.
Archie P. Kane grows a full body beard when the moon is full and throws the plates against the wall because he's nervous you're going to clean while he's trying to read out the blueprints. The language he learned from CAPTCHAs and West Nile incubation periods. He chews with bated breath and pretends he's someone with the stage presence of an early day De Niro or, say, Jack Nicholson in the 90s, when he was just overall seen as not so much losing it anymore, whatever it may be, but it being insanity and nepotism, the same hairs to pluck and bones to pick. Archie's not really a werewolf like he'll have you believe. He's just getting really senile these days, mumbling profanely in the corner of your house complaining about hairballs and broken china that never really exist in motherfucking poem.
Give it.
my message, take it back to anybody with a question. To the haters, I'm the freshest, so please show some discretion. Just because of word of mouth, yeah, I'm the kid you heard about, but I ain't from the dirty south. Now I'm a city boy, code name pretty witty, I get nitty gritty boy, in the inner city boy, sitting pretty high, yeah, high. Ain't no ladder, ain't no way to bring me down, but you can try. Sure to see Apollo, I'm just waiting on my chariot. Got those underground tracks, so niggas call me Harriet. So don't hate it cause you ain't it. Just know that you're hating on the greatest man. Haters make me famous. The raw truth. I got bills in the jacket. I'm the lawsuit. Won't stop till I'm huge as fuck. And I'm swimming in gold like Scrooge McDuck. And I got my numbers up from scratch. Check the lotto ticket. Money's on the fence. I gotta pick it. And the inside of my room looks like Midas's tomb. Now I'm sitting on a cake like the bride and the groom. And I found a way out like a child in the womb. I'm the bomb and it's time for the boom. And I see the bigger picture kind of fuzzy. I'm a lot in the zoom. And I ain't on top yet, but I bet I'm finding it soon. And my two top rappers, Def, Biggie, and Pop. So my rhymes are like a caveman with a twig and a rock. And some leaves to sustain it. Don't hate it cause you ain't it. Just know that you're hating on the greatest man. Haters make me famous.
Do you remember when we made those bucket lists?
I do remember when we made the bucket list. And
you
I think I'll throw down
yours really quick.
Yeah, you can go ahead and throw down my bucket list.
Because my girlfriend was reading, going through my notebook the other day and found it, stumbled upon it, and I could not stop laughing. It starts off with a, mine's pretty standard American. Yours is, a little bit different. Starts off with Black Swan Threesome, which Natalie Portman and Mila Kunis. Black Swan Threesome, mother-daughter threesome into the Chinese finger trap threesome. Smoke a blunt with a political figure. Climb a mountain and smoke a blunt. Smoke a blunt dressed as Santa Claus while handing out joints in the middle of July. And learn a new language. Pretty ambitious. I love it.
It is. All right, you have a good night. In America, I hope you have a good night, too. I'm really high.
Oh, man.
Get really high.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Hi, I'm Dr. Zillman, and I'd like to talk to you about your testes. The human testicle is not unlike a balloon. Sometimes it is empty. And sometimes it is full. And sometimes it can explode.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Here's all you need to know about men and women. Women are crazy, men are stupid. And the main reason women are crazy is that men are stupid. It's not the only reason, but it's a big one. And by the way, if you don't think men are stupid, check the newspaper. 99% of all the truly horrifying shit going on in this world was initiated, established, perpetrated, and enabled or continued by men. And that includes the wave and the high five, two of history's truly low points. But as I say, besides knowing that men are stupid, it's also important to remember that women are crazy. And if you don't think women are crazy, ask a man. That's the one thing men aren't stupid about. They know for sure, way down deep in their hearts, that women are straight out fucking nuts. But it doesn't just happen. It isn't an accident. Women have good reason to be nuts. The main one being that in the course of life, compared with men, they have far more to put up with. They bear greater burdens. Think of it this way. In the big cosmic cafeteria, as human beings move down the chow line of life and reach that section where the shit is being spooned out, women are given several extra portions. Now please understand, my motives here are not selfish or personal. I'm not saying all this stuff to get in good with women, although an occasional blowjob would be nice. But it's not a requirement. It's optional. BJO. Blowjob optional. No, I just think it should be evident to any person who's being honest and thinking clearly, that women carry a lot more of life's baggage than men. To begin with, they're smaller and weaker, so they get slapped, punched, raped, abused, and in general get the shit beat out of them on a rather regular basis. By men, of course, who are stronger. If women were stronger, this wouldn't be happening. Men would not raise a hand if they thought the balance was more equal. They'd back down quickly. Then again, if women were stronger, they'd probably be beating the shit out of men just for the fun of it. It's only fair.
Oh, good grief.
Let me tell you what Like a Virgin's about. It's all about a girl who digs a guy with a big dick. The entire song is a metaphor for big dicks.
No, it ain't. It's about a girl who's very vulnerable. She's been fucked over a few times, and then she meets a guy.
Whoa. Time out, Green Bay. Tell that fucking bullshit to the tourists.
Toby? Who the fuck is Toby?
Like a Virgin's not about some sensitive girl who meets a nice fella. That's what True Blue's about. No, granted, no argument about that.
Which one's True Blue?
Oh, you ain't heard True Blue. It's a big ass influencer. I don't even follow that top of the pop shit. You've never heard True Blue.
Yeah, so even saying her, that, you know, well, I am. How's it go? Excuse me from not being the world's biggest Madonna.
Personally, I can do without her.
I used to like her early stuff. Borderline. When she got out into that Papa Don't Preach phase, I tuned out.
But you guys are, like, making me lose my train of thought here. I was saying something. What was it?
Oh, Toby's that little Chinese girl. What was her last name?
What's that?
It's an old address book I found on a coat I haven't worn in a cruel's age. What was that name?
What the fuck was I talking about?
So True Blue was about a guy, a girl that meets a nice guy, but Like a Virgin was a metaphor for big dicks.
Okay, let me tell you what Like a Virgin was about. It's all about this cooze, who's a regular fuck machine. I'm talking morning, day, night, afternoon. Dick, 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 dick.
How many dicks is that?
A lot.
So one day, she meets this John Holmes motherfucker, and it's like, whoa, baby. I mean, this cat is like Charles Bronson in The Great Escape. He's digging tunnels. All right, now she's getting this serious dick action, and she's feeling something she ain't felt since forever. Pain. Pain.
Chu? Toby Chu?
It hurts. It hurts her. It shouldn't hurt. You know, her pussy should be bubbling up by now. But when this cat fucks her, it hurts. It hurts just like it did the first time. You see, the pain is reminding a fuck machine what it was once like to be a virgin. Hence, like a virgin.
Oh, well, now, kiss my bread!
This is Aldous Huxley, a man haunted by a vision of hell on earth. A searing social critic, Mr. Huxley, 27 years ago, wrote Brave New World, a novel that predicted that someday the entire world would live under a frightful dictatorship. Today, Mr. Huxley says that his fictional world of horror is probably just around the corner for all of us. We'll find out why in a moment.
The Mike Wallace Interview, presented by the American Broadcasting Company in association with the Fund for the Republic, brings you a special television series discussing the problems of survival and freedom in America.
Good evening, I'm Mike Wallace. Tonight's guest, Aldous Huxley, is a man of letters, as disturbing as he is distinguished. Born in England, now a resident of California, Mr. Huxley has written some of the most electric novels and social criticism of this century. He's just finished a series of essays called Enemies of Freedom, in which he outlines and defines some of the threats to our freedom in the United States. And Mr. Huxley, right off the bat, let me ask you this. As you see it, who and what are the enemies of freedom here in the United States?
Well, I don't think you can say who in the United States. I don't think there are any sinister persons deliberately trying to rob people of their freedom. But I do think, first of all, that there are a number of impersonal forces which are pushing in the direction of less and less freedom. And I also think that there are a number of technological devices which anybody who wishes to use can use to accelerate this process of going away from freedom, of imposing control.
Well, what are these forces and these devices, Mr. Huxley?
I should say that there are two main impersonal forces. The first of them is not exceedingly important in the United States at the present time, though very important in other countries. This is the force which in general terms can be called overpopulation, the mounting pressure of population pressing upon existing resources. This, of course, is an extraordinary thing. Something is happening which has never happened in the world's history before. I mean, let's just take a simple fact that between the time of the birth of Christ and the landing of the Mayflower, the population of the earth doubled. It rose from 250 million to probably 500 million. Today, the population of the earth is rising at such a rate that it will double in half a century.
Well, why should overpopulation work to diminish our freedoms?
Well, in a number of ways. I mean, the experts in the field, like Harrison Brown, for example, pointed out that in the underdeveloped countries, actually the standard of living is at present falling, that people have less to eat and less goods per capita than they had 50 years ago. And as the position of these countries, the economic position, becomes more and more precarious, obviously the central government has to take over more and more responsibility for keeping the ship of state on an even keel. And then, of course, you're likely to get social unrest under such conditions, with again an intervention of the central government. So I think one sees here a pattern which seems to be pushing very strongly towards a totalitarian regime. And unfortunately, as in all these underdeveloped countries, the only highly organized political party is the Communist Party, it looks rather as though they will be the heirs to this unfortunate process, that they will step into the power, position of power.
Well, then, ironically enough, one of the greatest forces against communism in the world, the Catholic Church, according to your thesis, would seem to be pushing us directly into the hands of the communists because they are against birth control.
Pope Paul has decisively dealt with the questions about birth control raised in the last few years. Although the document itself is not infallible in form, it is nevertheless the authoritative teaching of the Church, which rests on an unbroken tradition going back to the beginning of Christianity.
He acknowledges that this encyclical, which has caused so much dispute, is not infallible. And then he goes on to say that it is, however, authoritative. I think even you gentlemen of the press who are not theologians could sense that there is something of a problem here when a doctrine which is fallible, that is possibly wrong, is authoritative, and that it takes a considerable amount of work for us theologians to explain just how bound people are in their consciences. If an individual discovers that this fallible doctrine is wrong, and that individual is a priest, is he then expected to serve the truth, or is he expected to serve the official position as it has been announced? We are not intending to meddle into the internal affairs of a sister church. We are concerned that the wider ministry of an ecumenical understanding of the Christian faith be deeply understood by saying that poor people have a chance to hear all sides of an issue as crucial as the birth control issue. It is not my intention to say that the Pope and the Cardinal do not have the right, and by all means they must present what they consider to be the authentic teaching. But it is my consideration that when a pastor, fulfilling his understanding of conscience and teaching in the black community, that the issues must be clearly understood.
I think that he did this out of a mistaken notion of what it means to be traditional. And I believe that, unfortunately, his idea is to be in keeping with previous papal encyclicals rather than with the growing and living tradition of the church as it's reflected in the lives of its faithful people in decisions they have to make.
The encyclical is not harsh with people who honestly try to fulfill, please note the words, the high moral standard of chastity in marriage, but who fail through weakness.
Mother of nine this morning, and I think her answer may be typical. She said that this was a disaster, and it wasn't in terms of her own personal life that she was talking about it. She meant that it was a disaster in terms of the meaning of the church for the rest of the world.
Pope Paul reminds us, quote, Christ was absolutely unbending with sin, but merciful and patient with sinners.
Confessors are obviously far more aware of the real moral problems than the Pope is. And it seems to me that just as some people will not feel it necessary to go to confession, and some will, that the unfortunate habit of shopping around for a confessor will be on the increase among those who feel that they do have to go.
Those who imagine the Catholic Church will ever reverse herself in this matter are mistaken.
And I feel that this is a very sad day for the Church if the only kind of obedience that is going to be accepted is one which is without complete intellectual adherence, and that seems to be the way it is.
I will accept nothing less than mahogany.
There is no substitute for Diana Ross.
Love.
Are you pondering what I'm pondering?
What has changed is attitudes about it and about its role in life. Now, our college students, according to the studies, are very clearly not going to prostitutes. That is, the males are not going to prostitutes. This is one enormous change in behavior as between my generation and the present generation. But also, accompanying this change, that is, sex, if you have any kind of sexual behavior, is with, let's say, the girl next door rather than a paid prostitute, it is a more personalized thing. It is far less of an exploitive thing. It is something you don't go into casually. I resist the word casual, definitely, on behalf of the younger generation. It is a relationship. And therefore, I think that it behooves adults to understand the struggles of the young people to elevate sexual behavior, let me put it that way, outside of marriage, the same kind of sexual behavior that the generations have always had.
We have a sexual ethic which is the joke of the world. We are laughed at in every country of the world for our attitudes towards sex. The United States is living out some mad Protestant 19th century dream of human behavior. Instead of saying, aren't we wicked because we have a high divorce rate, or aren't we wicked because men like to go to bed with men and women like to go to bed with women, why not begin by saying that our basic values are all wrong? The idea of marriage is obsolete in our society. Everybody knows it. there are natural monogamists. There are people who indeed enjoy one another's company. But can you imagine a man and a woman who are told that for 60 years they're going to have to live together and have sex only with one another? This is nonsense. Why not begin by accepting the fact what human beings really are, men and women, which is we are open. We have something that André Gide referred to as floating sensuality. We can be aroused by this, by that, not necessarily by men, not necessarily by women. So let us begin with the reality of human relations and not start talking about moral fiber, because we're not living out this mad 19th century dream of that everybody, we must go in Noah's Ark in twos, one male, one female, and for 60 years in one another's company. This is what's at fault. This is breaking down, and I think that the so-called the breaking of the moral fiber of the country, these commentators speak of, is one of the healthiest things that's begun to happen.
I'm the happiest son of a bitch in the world.
Missed it by that much.
We have a lot of problems in the world, but the main problem is the fact that I can't dance. This is the politics of modern dance. On the news, they are talking about war. Blah, blah, blah. I find it all very depressing. What the American people should damn well be worried about is me on the dance floor. Move over, Fred Astaire. I wasn't blessed with the gift of tap. When they blew up the World Trade Center, my feet were the bomb they never saw coming. They're going to send our boys to a land I've never seen and I can't two-step. I once told a woman that great poets can't dance, and she just laughed, saying that I must be the greatest poet since Shakespeare. Don't get me wrong. It's not like I don't care. It's just that I might want to get married someday. And the thought of that first dance freaks me out more than any stray bullet that might hit everything but my feet. What the troops need is someone like John Travolta as a drill instructor. How ironic. I don't imagine George W. can dance any better than I can. And lately I've been thinking that all our problems can be boiled down to a simple lack of rhythm. So you won't catch me doing one last tango in Paris, Texas. My steps would be the shot heard around the world, louder than the screams from any fallen shuttle. So when everything passes, or until we experience the kind of end that Jim Morrison must have been talking about, I'll just send a silent prayer to Mr. Bojangles, who must be rolling over in his grave with the knowledge that America can no longer get by on fancy footwork.
Thank you. I guess it comes down to a simple choice, really. Get busy living, you get busy dying.
Across the bar, my seat's been taken by some sunglasses, asking about a cigar, and I know I gave it to you months ago. I know you're trying to forget, but between the drinks and subtle things, the holes in my apologies, you know, I'm trying hard to take it back. So if by the time the bar closes and you feel like falling down, I'll carry you home.
No mix of words or music or memories can touch that sense of knowing that you were there and alive in that corner of time in the world, whatever it meant. There was madness in any direction, at any hour. You could strike sparks anywhere. There was a fantastic universal sense that whatever we were doing was right, that we were winning. And that, I think, was the handle. That sense of inevitable victory over the forces of old and evil. Not in any mean or military sense. We didn't need that. Our energy would simply prevail. We had all the momentum. We were riding the crest of a high and beautiful wave.
And now, Bud Smith reading in Albuquerque, New Mexico at Happy Folk in Endings. Enjoy.
This poem is called Love and the Words Under the Water. When all else fails, I will be good. No more flip-flopping, dragging along, eating dust, dying slowly, pretending to like it. Unavoidable checks, power pills, invincible bubblegum, frost, fake coins, dotted lines, rip maps, traffic signs. I hope you slept well. No, I didn't sleep at all. Ignore a long time at every door. On every door, hang a little sign says you won't keep me out forever. Talk to anyone who listens about neon fish, strange starting birds, loving the war zones of the wild, telephone moons, vinyl records, your father and your mother and the field where they'll be buried one day. But for now, enjoy doing donuts in the parking lots of hell. Busted streetlights, lost tickets, notices in the mail, snail mail, memos from long-lost prom dates. Send yourself a letter while drunk. Receive it 2 days later, sober, saying sincerely, I'm so thankful for your love and for your correspondence. You in the pouring rain, looking good. Me in the mud, looking at you. High fives to the wind. Kissing blues, kissing stones, kissing anything that moves. Skipping through the stations, looking, listening, constantly revising. I'm not afraid of anything, and I won't ever die. But when you kiss me, I can still feel it stinging.
Another man's come up. Whoa. Thank your granddad for donating that plaid button up shirt. Cause right now I'm up in her skirt. I'm at the Goodwill, you can find me in the. I'm not stuck on searching in the section. Whoa. Your grandma, your auntie, your mama, your mammy. I'll take those flannel zebra jammies secondhand and rock that motherfucker. The built-in onesie with the socks on that motherfucker. I hit the party and they stop in that motherfucker. Whoa. They be like, oh, that Gucci, that's hella tight. I'm like, yo, that's $50 for a t-shirt. Limited edition, let's do some simple edition. $50 for a t-shirt, that's just some ignorant bitch. I call that getting swindled and pimped. I call that getting tricked by business. That shirt's hella dope. And having the same one as six other people in this club is a hella don't. Peep gang, come take a look through my telescope. Trying to get girls from a brand, man, you hella won't. Man, you hella won't.
Goodwill. Keep popping tags. Yes, sir.
looking for a come up. This is fucking awesome. Oh. I'll wear your granddad's clothes. I look incredible. I'm in this big ass coat from that thrift shop down the road. I'll wear your granddad's clothes.
Damn right.
I look incredible.
Hey, come on, man.
I'm in this big ass coat
big ass
from that thrift shop down the
Let's
road.
Go, go.
I'm gonna pop some tags. Only got $20 in my pocket. I'm hunting, looking for a come up. This is fucking awesome.
Is that your grandma's coat?
I represent divine principle, total equality, a society where people own all things in common, where there is no rich or poor, where there are no races, wherever there's people struggling for justice and righteousness, there I am, and there I am involved.
What he spoke about were things that were in our hearts. The government was not taking care of the people. There were too many poor people out there. There were poor children.
The world is like a human family. The little child may not be able to go and draw a paycheck, but the father guarantees the child care. The grandmother may not be able to work anymore, but the father and mother guarantees her the right to live.
Every single person felt that they had a purpose there and that they were exceptionally special. And that is how he brought so many young college kids in, so many older black women in, so many people from diverse backgrounds who realized that there was something bigger than themselves that they needed to be involved in, and that Jim Jones offered them.
We're going to do it right here. We don't have a microphone, so it's going to be gangster's hell, and you're going to all enjoy the hell out of it. This is Dustin Holland. He's a senior in high school, phenomenal writer. Listen to some of his words.
Hi, I'm Dustin. Thanks for having me. Here's this. Duck walking is the only way out of Armageddon. They will sell you lies. They will sell you lies and call it justice. They'll sell you dead kids and call it art. They'll sell you violence and call it revolution. Buildings will melt into the clouds. Ponds will freeze over and children will cry in the hot sun because we don't have a saxophone this year. But you and me can waddle out of here hand in hand. We can duck walk down the streets and watch all the green paper fly back and forth. You and me could move in together, just 100 million of us. We could put bunk beds in the White House and just quack for bread. The elephants are hungry, but we could all just duck walk out of this Armageddon, hand in hand, wing in wing. You and me could skate across the pond.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Aw, thanks. Can science get dance on Tuesday afternoons while we practice our second languages in the dark room and modern-day Robin Hoods dance in burger joints? Should we let our geometry dry, or will these overexposed pictures of our rebellion burn up in the atmosphere? The new flower tattoo still bleeds a little on her arm. Immortal, never wilting. I'll read one more from this book, and then I'll read some better ones. Climbed prefabricated rocks, ridiculous smooth jazz crooning behind me, there is no Stonehenge.
Yeah.
The first poem of the new year slides down the wall like rubber brain for months at a time. My cell phone won't talk to me. I spend my days in catatonic high school land looking for Christ, but I think he dropped out already. Malatesta walks up and down bear trap alleyways under bald cap sunset because Henny Penny is bringing the war home in plastic bags and ultra leather hand warmers, like in December when my heart wants to eat the world and no one is looking, and the great stuck up time swindle never even saw it coming. So I'm 17 and I don't really have much of a social life, so I don't have that many experiences to draw from to write about, so I mostly write about other people who write, because that's what 17-year-olds do. So here's this. It's like when Miguel Pinheiro stands naked on the roof of the hell that lives in your head, the hell that tries to escape during the Monday night news, the hell that used to write all my poems. MTV's reckoning moves down Butterknife Creek like a switchblade. Anti-gravity milk leaks through the cracks in the fridge. Disenfranchised youth write their own ghost dance out the door, and it's like when Miguel Pinheiro stands naked in the cold air and the stars behind your eyes, a planet unto himself. I need to learn to stop shaving. Wild Apache pirates, cowboys from Colorado bum around the country in ridiculous hats. Because maybe life should be like the end of a great play or a Van Gogh painting or something innocent and beautiful and free. And I guess it's sort of like when Miguel Pinheiro stands naked just outside of one last holy moment with nothing to say.
Yeah.
And I'll read two more if that's all right.
Yeah.
Cool. I wrote this one when I was camping and a park ranger tried to teach me about elk. It went over my head, but the ranger said, "The elk won't stop fucking. We tried to teach them to pull out, but they've got no rhythm and no predator." I think that's the best poem I've ever written. Here's one more. Hooyup. Five blocks from any given midnight, Gustav Mahler hits an old woman right square in the mouth and doesn't even feel bad about it. Tonight, after and away from the hallways of our insufferable education, Dennis Hopper is starting to look a lot like Joseph Smith, and you are my cassette tape angel with a secret. In caves and canyons and then head south for winter where no one can see us, where the second dimension finds its endings in the snow, like fireworks, like headstones, like the styrofoam packing peanuts and plastic Buddhas of our infinite finishings under piles of old shoes in the closet. Like on the top of a mountain in the brand new empty, in the Tibetan store with the bumper stickers and crack pipes behind the counter looking for a knife for Jake, with river songs and six shooters and the Federales won't even know what to call us or where to send our mail.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Dustin Holland.
I wanted to get a round of applause for his parents.
Oh, man. I will never forgive your ass for this shit. This is some fucked up, repugnant shit.
Jules, did you ever hear the philosophy that once a man admits that he is wrong, that he is immediately forgiven for all wrongdoings? Have you ever heard that?
Get the fuck out of my face with that shit. The motherfucker said that shit never had to pick up itty-bitty pieces of skull on account of your dumb ass.
I got a threshold, Jules. I got a threshold for the abuse that I will take. Now, I'm a fucking race car, right? And you got me in a red. And I'm just saying that it's fucking dangerous to have a race car in a fucking red. That's all. I can blow.
Oh, you ready to blow?
Yeah, I'm ready to blow.
Well, I'm a mushroom cloud-laying motherfucker. Every time my fingers touch brain, I'm Superfly TNT. I'm the guns of the Navarone. In fact, what the fuck am I doing in the back? You the motherfucker should be on brain detail. We're fucking switching. I'm washing the windows, and you picking up this nigga's skull.
Were you trying to get crazy with this thing? Don't you know I'm loco?
Blabber.
remember when you ran away and I got on my knees and begged you not to leave because I go berserk? Well, you left me anyhow, and then the days got worse and worse, and now you see I've gone completely out of my mind. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha! You thought it was a joke, and so you laughed. You laughed when I had said that losing you would make me flip my lid. Right? You know you laughed. I heard you laugh. You laughed, you laughed, and laughed, and then you left. But now you know I'm utterly mad. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and fiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. I cooked your food, I cleaned your house, and this is how you pay me back for all my kind, unselfish, loving deeds. Ha-ha. Well, you just wait, they'll find you yet. And when they do, they'll put you in the ASPCA, you mangy mutt. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time. And I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and fiddle their thumbs and toes. And they're coming to take me away.
When people say to me, how come you're divorced? I just make up a lie and say, my mother-in-law broke up my marriage. I say, well, how'd that happen? So one day my wife came home early from work and she found us in bed together. She's an old woman but firm, and I don't know if there's any losers sitting out here. But when you break up with your old lady, you get divorced, the places that you go together, then when you go in alone, they would say, where it's, I don't know if it's the market or the laundromat, they say, where's your wife? They say, I'm divorced. And there's always an embarrassed silence. They don't know what to do. You should get together, you know, a lovely couple. They don't know what the hell. They don't even know you. But so we used to go to a Chinese restaurant on this strip a lot, you know, in Los Angeles. For years we went there together. So when I go in alone, the waiter says to me, where's Mama? How come you don't bring Mama anymore? Such a beautiful girl, her long red hair, but I like her. Here's some cookies, bring Mama home some cookies. I said, I'm divorced. So, oh, you better off. I'm at a left field. See, the problem, like, I don't know if you'll encounter it. It's particularly a show business problem because of my hours. I'm not a particularly promiscuous person. But I want to have, you know, somebody to hang out with, to talk to. So usually I go out with chicks that are between 30 and 40 because they're usually divorced and good and bitter too, you know. But the hang-up is, where can you go at 4 in the morning? And every chick I know who's divorced got a 7-year-old kid. They haven't got a 7-year-old kid, they got a mother who lives with them who's divorced too. And those kind of mothers, real nuts, complete competition with their daughters, you know. You think I got nice legs? It was a Charleston dancer. Those are so cool. And then, oh, they have a mother, oh, they've got a French poodle that wants to stay in the bedroom with you. You keep saying, why should the door go out? Yeah, it's cute, you don't bother you. But I don't have to watch, you know. The voyeurs, get rid of them. At least there's one dog that has a Doberman Pinscher. There's a dog. You train him, you raise him, 10 years, he kills you. He's proven something. You know? And the hang-up is like, leave at 4 o'clock in the morning. Where are you going to, if you say hotel, a semantic that's out, you know, it's got really like a lewd connotation already to it. So I figured all different devices, like tell a chick, a trailer, that sounds cute, right? Nothing dirty about trailers. Yeah, when I got to my trailer, okay, yeah. Well, it's my hotel room now. I have to assemble it. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, desks are very cruel. Whoever designed hotels because it's really rough to pay at the desk. Because even if I know a chick, at that crucial moment, I forget her last name. I'm learning at 10:06, right? Go to the 11th floor, walk down one. So you walk in, and you walk right past the desk, like the long ass elevator. As soon as you hear Mr., you go, do you live here? And he's like, should I? Yes, I never go out much. This one chick, and I kind of dug up. I knew a couple of years. See, after work, we're going to go. Let's go to a motel, all right? Now, I'm going to go there. And I pick her up. We're driving. She said, we can't go. I said, why not? So I haven't got any luggage. I said, all right, let's stop at the market. We'll get a brown paper bag and some apples. Now, we're in front of the motel. I said, all right, you go in because I'm not going to be embarrassed with the registering and all that. All right? So you sit in the car. This guy in the little glass house there. And I look at him, 50 feet away, and I'm really getting a lot of trauma going on. You know, so I'll tell him, and if he says this, and I'm writing a whole screenplay, you know. And I look, and I say, I'm dead already. The guy's reading The Watchtower. And there's two women next to him. They're trading some Arizona Trailways of them, you know. So I go in there, and I've written a whole play by the time we get the guy's writing and working. Hello? Oh. How much is here a month? Well, we just have a daily rate of $6. And tell you what, my sister's out in the car, and we had a tragedy in our family. My uncle passed away, and I don't know if you've ever had a tragedy like that. We were very close to him, in fact, and she's all shook up, and she's under sedation now. She's just hysterical, so I'm going to sleep with her. And they just want the bread, just signed things, blah, blah, blah. They go in, and motels, from a woman's viewpoint, are cold. There's nothing to rationalize. At least you tell a chick, you know, put on your bed, and you go, listen, I'm going upstairs, get a shirt. Why don't you come up? You know, cold in the car, you know. But motels, you know, nothing. Here we are. Ha, 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 ha. The bed is 3 feet from everything. One chair. The glass has been sanitized for your safety. The toilet seat's tied up. There's nothing to read. Except, have you forgot anything? Right?